Good afternoon. You're listening to KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Thank you for tuning in. As the Juneau Assembly moves forward with ending the city's involvement in Eagle Crest Ski Area's controversial gondola project, they're now trying to figure out what to do with the parts. At an Assembly Committee of the Whole meeting last night, the Assembly asked city staff to pursue a plan to terminate the project and sell all its parts and equipment. The Assembly voted in early April to divest from the gondola project and pay back a $10 million investment from Gold Belt Incorporated. But that decision isn't fully set in stone yet. The Assembly is slated to take public testimony and a final vote on May 18th. The project's price tag skyrocketed to more than $37 million due to additional parts, high construction costs, and tariffs on imports. When the city purchased the gondola in 2022, the project was estimated to cost under $10 million. At the meeting, City Manager Katie Kester said selling the gondola's parts and equipment would recover some money, but not nearly all of the $11 million already poured into the project.
It anticipates a recovery of $1.6 million, but a timeline of 2 to 3 years to get there, mostly because selling the gondola parts will take time and we will have to hire someone to do that business.
Right now, the project's parts are scattered across thousands of miles. While some of it's in Juneau, there is still some equipment in Austria waiting to be shipped over, and the gondola cars are in Colorado being refurbished. Assembly members also discussed what to do with the ski area now that the gondola project is likely not happening. Since its purchase, the gondola has been touted as the saving grace for the ski area, which has long struggled to stay financially afloat without city subsidies. The Assembly is currently in the midst of considering whether to subsidize Eagle Crest for the next fiscal year. If it doesn't, the ski area will likely not be able to operate. They're also considering having a third-party entity take over the ski area. Those are separate decisions that the Assembly will tackle in the coming weeks as it finalizes the city's budget. May 5th is a day of awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous people. For many families, it's a reminder of cases that are still open and may never close, like Tracy Day's case. Day is a Tlingit woman from Juneau who went missing in 2019. Last year, Day's family requested a death declaration hearing as a way to ask police officers questions about their investigation. But the judge said their questioning wasn't allowed, even though it was allowed for the family of another Alaska Native woman who went missing. Tracy Day went missing in 2019. Ever since, her daughter, Kaylin Schneider, has been using TikTok and other avenues to draw attention to her case.
Imagine your mother disappears with absolutely no trace of what's happened to her and the police.
Day was Tlingit, and her disappearance fits a broader pattern of Indigenous women who go missing or are killed at rates far higher than non-Indigenous women. Last year, Schneider petitioned the state to have her mother declared legally dead. For her, this was a chance to prod Juneau police officials publicly about the investigation into Day's disappearance to finally get answers. Here's Schneider during the presumptive death hearing.
I was hoping to ask JPD a few questions. I didn't realize that I wasn't going to get that chance. I had some questions that I felt were important to the case, but...
Judge Peggy McCoy did not allow her to ask them.
Well, this is not about the investigation.
Right,
it's about whether they believe she's still alive.
After the hearing that legally declared her mother dead, Schneider told KTOO in the courthouse she'd spent weeks preparing for the chance to ask officers questions.
We don't care about a death certificate. We just wanted to tell her story in a legal setting and make JPD answer our questions. That's what this was about.
Schneider was not off base to think she'd be allowed to question police officers. She had reason to think this. 1 year earlier, at another presumptive death declaration hearing in Anchorage for a different missing Alaska Native woman, the woman's family was able to question police officers about their investigation. The woman's name was Cassandra Boskovsky. She went missing in Anchorage in 2019, just months after Tracy Day disappeared in Juneau. 5 years later, with prompting by MMIP advocates, Anchorage police connected a photo of a woman found on the phone of serial killer Brian Stephen Smith with Boskovsky's missing persons case. Boskovsky's death declaration was a result of this information, that she was likely killed by Smith. The judge at the Boskovsky hearing allowed the family to interview police officers about the investigation in front of a jury. Here's Judge Brian Clark talking to Boskovsky's cousin, Marcella Boskovsky Grounds, in a recording of the 2024 hearing.
Ms. Boskovsky Grounds, are there any other questions that you think this witness should talk about before we ask the jurors?
Judge Clark also allowed family members to read testimony they prepared and said information the family and advocates brought to the hearing was admissible.
Like I said, this is not an adversarial proceeding. Nobody is going to object to that.
Now, more than a year after the hearing, Boskovsky Grounds said the experience was empowering and intense.
It was relieving in a sense. Heart-wrenching. I had all kinds of mixed emotions going on at that time.
She suspects that nationwide media coverage on Brian Stephen Smith was part of the reason the courts gave her family so much power during the hearing. Tracy Day's family, however, wasn't given the same opportunity. Now, nearly a year later, Kaylin Schneider says the hearing is still a painful memory.
I actually stopped talking about it for a while because I was so just deeply traumatized by the situation.
For Schneider, the presumptive death declaration was a Hail Mary, a chance to get JPD to reinvestigate the case.
For a while, I was feeling pretty hopeless about it. It was really hard because I felt like that was our last ditch effort. You know, we had nothing. We had no body, no proof that a crime occurred.
She says it was important to her to ask JPD questions about the investigation into her mother's disappearance in front of a public audience. She saw social media posts by other MMIP advocates who said these hearings were a way to question investigators.
It was like, oh my God, this is genius because it's a legal loophole where we can force them to be in a courtroom answering these questions and they can't just like say no.
Ann Schneider still wants the answers to the questions she prepared to ask JPD at the hearing.
I really just want to know, like, who they looked into, what evidence they have, and if they plan on doing anything or if they're just going to leave it open and unattended by an investigator.
Juneau police say they will investigate new leads as they come in, and they're reevaluating their procedures for communicating with families of missing people. A spokesperson from the Alaska Department of Law said that aside from brief guidelines, it's up to the judge how witness testimony will be presented in death declaration hearings. In Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumery. In another story coming later this week, KTOO looks into the questions Schneider wanted to ask Juneau police at that hearing. And the Norton Sound community of Shaktulik said their goodbyes to Kelly Hunt at a memorial service this Saturday. She was the 19-year-old whose remains were found in a ravine in Spinard 2 weeks ago, following her disappearance in January. Prayers to bring Kelly Hunt home were finally answered, although not in the way the community had hoped. She was last seen visiting friends in Anchorage and on her way to attend the Alaska Christian College in Soldotna. During the service, the lingering question of what happened to Hunt was set aside to grieve and remember her as a young person, full of life and potential, qualities that Linda Bukolik says she cherishes. In her more than 2 decades as a teacher in Shaktulik, she remembers Hunt as one of the community's most promising students.
She was always positive and willing to jump in and help no matter where. She was very diligent in school. She never gave up. She played sports, of course, basketball and volleyball. And when she was younger, she did wrestling. She always had a smile on her face.
Bukolik says that everyone at the school encouraged Hunt to go to college. The community even raised money to help her with expenses, because they were proud of how she had overcome so many challenges at an early age.
Because she had all brothers, she was the light of their lives, of everybody's life in that family.
She said Hunt's dog was a love of her life. She would often catch glimpses of them walking near the store. There was a picture of Hunt giving her dog a big bear hug in a slideshow that closed her memorial service, along with photos of her high school graduation, dribbling down the court, having fun with friends and loved ones, all set to the tune of All Fly Away. The Anchorage police continue to investigate her case with no word yet on how she died. No suspects have been arrested. And the Alaska legislature failed to override Governor Mike Dunleavy's veto of a closely watched election reform bill this afternoon. The override vote failed by 2 votes after 2 Southeast Alaska lawmakers who had previously supported the bill voted no. As Alaska Public Media's Eric Stone reports, backers said they hoped the bill would make it easier to vote and harder to cheat.
Sometimes in the Alaska legislature, just as in life, timing is everything. Timing is what Governor Dunleavy cited in his message to lawmakers announcing his veto. With the November election just 6 months away, he says there just isn't time to implement a system allowing voters to track and correct minor errors on their absentee ballots. The lawmakers who flipped, Sitka Senator Burt Stedman and Ketchikan Representative Jeremy Bynum, both Republicans, say they agree with Dunleavy's assessment. Here's Bynum.
From the time that the bill was passed to the time that the governor actually got it, there was delay. And then when the governor got it, there was delay.
But Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, says there was plenty of time to implement the bill. He pointed to the all-male special primary election following the death of Congressman Don Young in 2022.
Just 5-6 weeks later, the governor's Division of Elections announced that ballot tracking would be available by the company Ballot Tracks for the June 11, 2022 election. 6 weeks. They got a ballot tracking system set up in 6 weeks. Just 4 years ago.
One caveat on that, it's the lieutenant governor, not the governor, who heads the Division of Elections. And 4 years later, there's a different lieutenant governor and a different director of the Division of Elections. That new Division of Elections director, though, said in March that implementing a tracking system would be, quote, challenging. Not notably that it couldn't be done. And Wielichowski says he wishes the administration was up for the challenge.
I'm not prepared to tell Alaskans, sorry, you'll have to wait another year. It's just too hard.
Wielichowski and co-sponsor Representative Sarah Vance, a conservative Homer Republican, say they tried to strike a bipartisan balance.
Right now, our system is broken, where not every vote is being counted. Our roles have not been tightened up to the level that builds confidence, that ensures people that they have a legal vote.
The bill included prepaid postage on absentee ballots, an elections liaison for rural communities, and better pay for election workers in villages where it's often difficult to find people to staff the polls. And there was a requirement that voters be notified of a data breach, a quicker timeline for reporting results, and provisions aimed at keeping the state's voter rolls correct despite Alaska's transient population. Supporters ranged from the most liberal Democrats to the most conservative Republicans. Big Lake Republican Representative Kevin McCabe, who voted to override the governor, offered an apology.
Not for my vote. I stand by my vote on this bill. I'm apologizing to Alaskans who will bear the cost of this veto.
He apologized to members of the military, people living in rural Alaska, and people in southwest Alaska who were sent the wrong ballots for the 2024 election, among others. Strikingly, neither advocates nor opponents in the legislature claimed the bill would help one party more than another. Timing was the issue. Dunleavy encouraged lawmakers to try again with another bill. Bynum, who flipped from yes to no, said he would vote for a future bill without such a tight timeline. But with just 2.5 weeks to go in the legislative session, that appears unlikely. There just isn't time. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Eric Stone.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 54 degrees and overcast this afternoon. It looks like we're expecting a little bit of rain tonight, and that may increase tomorrow. This is KTOO. Thank you for tuning in.